Welcome to the podcast. Here we explore ambition, well-being, and impact, and we dive deep under the surface level tactics so that you can build a freedom-focused business on your terms. Hi, I'm your host, Annalise Warne, an agency CEO, business strategist, and coach, as well as a wife and homeschooling, traveling mama of four little ones. Stay tuned for conversations with inspirational business leaders, as well as practical marketing and leadership strategies that you can action right away. So, let's get into it. In this conversation, I interviewed Roseanne Michie. Roseanne is a writer, former newspaper columnist, and broadcaster. She is a mum and stepmom of kids with unique challenges, survivor of family trauma, and lover of a great party. She has also spent several years at the pointy end of corporate life and as a consultant specializing in change. Roseanne has written a book called Change Your Life in 10 Minutes. And her story weaves through the book, which is packed with easy to digest information and 10-minute tips of easy life hacks that can help remove blocks and help transform your life. Now, in this conversation, we spoke about a little bit about Roseanne's story and how the book came about, why change is hard, and how that when we are feeling stuck, we can reach for the low-hanging fruit to gain momentum. Roseanne is super honest and fun and gets really vulnerable. So I hope that you enjoy this conversation with Roseanne, and you can head over to changeyourlifein10minutes.com to read more and grab a copy of the book. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Roseanne, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Annalise. Thank you for that amazing intro. It was quite humbling.
I'm so happy to be speaking with you today. Congratulations. Your book is out in the world.
Thank you. And thank you also because you had a hand in it. So I'm very appreciative of your sage advice.
You're very welcome. I'm so grateful that you are here today and that we get to have this conversation. So tell me, the book, Change Your Life in 10 Minutes, how did this come about?
Well, there's kind of like the short story and the long story, and then there's the really friggin' long story. So we'll see how we go. But it's a kind of very long story short. Probably like all of us, I've had some pretty tricky times. And there was some particularly challenging moments when I was bringing up two young girls and was experiencing family trauma, and things were, to put it bluntly, bordering on dangerous. And at that point, at that lowest point, one of the things that got me through, or perhaps it was in fact the only thing that got me through, was the knowledge of, oh God, I have to turn this shit show into something constructive. This must be happening for a reason. And if nothing else, I can somehow need to use this to show my young daughters at the time that, bad things happen to good people or bad people or indeed any people. And the only really way to look at it is to somehow make that constructive and turn it around and use that, I hate to use the word as ammunition, but to use that to set an example to them, to not give up. So when at that lowest point, I sort of had that motivation that one day I want to use this for a purpose and to sort of help others when they're in their darkest moment. So then sort of cut another, 15 years. And I was swimming in the beautiful coastline of Torquay, except it wasn't so beautiful. It was just horrendous. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. I was training for an ocean swim around an island. And for a non-swimmer, I was literally out of my comfort zone. So I found myself up to my neck in what felt like baby vomit at 6 o'clock in the morning, edging in to swim out to the buoy. As I said, not a very strong swimmer. So at that point, you know, I was full of dread and remorse and, you know, self-flagellation about why would I at this age and stage be doing something just that I'm so ill-suited to, and why possibly would I be doing this? And, you know, did I mention it was the middle of winter? And so it was just absolutely horrendous. So I chopped and hacked my way out the way to the buoy, you know, huffed and puffed and chopped and hacked and full of recriminations and remorse. And then I got to the buoy and I turned around, and it was kind of like this magical moment where, like, the tide turned, the sun came up, and I just sort of felt like I had the wind, you know, under my wings at that point. And I found that I was in the slipstream, and I, you know, it was like momentum was behind me, and I just had this really euphoric moment. If it doesn't sound too spiritual, I don't know that it was a spiritual moment, but it definitely was a defining moment. And I just had this sort of overwhelming sense of well-being and pride. And that's when I had this really strong sense that, shit, you really can change your life in 10 minutes. Because my mindset from 10 minutes earlier was like a stranger. And I was, you know, and anyone who, even after a swim, I think, you know, you tend to feel this enormous surge of energy and well-being. It kind of overwhelmed me at the time. And then my head just sort of started thinking, okay, that's the book that I want to do. That's the moment. That's the angle. That's the way I'm able to use this mechanism to help people through my own wisdom. So I raced home and I Googled, has this book been done? No, it hadn't. And probably I should preface it with, I've been working in change management in communication. So I've been helping large organizations through what they would call change, or as they say in corporate speak, right sizing. So I was helping with the communications of how you would pitch, you know, how you would pitch these, you know, inherently negative messages. And so I had been studying change theory. And it was through that theory that I learned that no change is possible without motion. And so that's when I kind of got this idea of the hundreds of ways of things you can do in 10 minutes that essentially can change your life.
Wow. Well, for someone who is also, how do I put it, adverse to cold and cold water, especially at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's like an absolute miracle to me that you could change it around in 10 minutes. So,
well, something good has to come from that dreadful place.
Seriously, when you first told me, I was like, oh, this must be a real thing, because if she felt like I feel about cold water and that changed in 10 minutes, okay, but, wow, I believe you.
Like, you know what, there's now, because of course they know a lot more about it, there's so much science around the Wim Hof method and cold therapy and cold water therapy, and there's this music, the movie that I actually haven't seen yet about NIAID, and I've discovered the joys of ocean water swimming. So I found that I had tapped into a movement, but at the time it just felt like, as I said, baby vomit, frankly.
Yeah, I don't know. I know all of those things because I love sauna and all of that, but even just turning off the hot water at the end of the shower to have the 30 seconds of cold is like just absolute hell for me. My husband jokes and says that I like the water lava temperature and will not get in the shower with me. So,
you know what, there's nothing wrong with that at all, because I think one of the things that I hoped to sort of impart through the book is I've used my personal story that's woven through it, and then we go into themes, and one of the themes, in fact, the first theme is water, and then I've tapped into the science of it because it is backed by science, and then I've gone into hundreds of tips. But the best thing is, you know, it's a shame-free zone, so there's no should or could in change, and nobody else kind of knows the philosophy for you. And so that was also kind of that mindset that I wanted to bring to the book, because part of the thing that that stops me, and probably you, and probably most of our listeners, one of the things that stops us from making that change is that fear of failure. or that fear of screwing up, or that fear that I can't do that, or I don't like it, or it's cold, or it's hot, or I'm too fat, or I'm too ugly, or I'm too old. You know, we have this kind of script that we're running in our head, and then, and it's those things that sort of create the blocks of why we procrastinate, or we, you know, get a little bit frozen with the thought of, you know, at the thought of changing. So that's very much part of what I, you know, the philosophy of the book is, doesn't matter what it is, just give it a crack. And if 10 minutes is too long, try 5 minutes. And if 5 minutes is too long, try 1 minute. And if it's the case of the ocean and standing on the edge, I've kind of come up with this theory that I call inching, because not everybody has the desire, the makeup, or the, you know, the inclination or the confidence or the level of insanity to perhaps dive in. You know, we're not all diver innerers, you know, or dive in at the deep end or jump in. So part of the thing for this book is, you know, if you're a sort of tip, you know, dip your toe in the water kind of gal or a guy, perfect, you know. And so I've come up with this thing called inching. So, you know, if 10 minutes is too long, try an inch, you know, try, because the science of change is you only need to change the dial 1 degree for there in fact to be change. And like I said, change is based on motion. So even if it's just 1 degree or 1 inch, that's actually movement, and that's change, and that's all you need to get the process going, and that gives you enough to build on, you know. So 1 inch becomes two, 1 minute becomes two, can become. And the other thing I found about 10 minutes, because there was this scientific thing around 10 minutes, you know, why 10 minutes? One, it was sort of like, everybody's got 10 minutes. I'm sorry. You know, like pretty much everybody's got 10 minutes. We're all too busy. You know, we're all kind of overcommitted, or we're a little bit gripped by fear anyway. I haven't got time to do this perfectly or properly, so I won't do it at all. So something about 10 minutes gives you license to just give it a go as best you can. There's no perfect required. It's only, all that's required is starting, you know. So there's a good sort of energy or and also history and science around 10 minutes, because it's long enough to actually make a genuine start and achieve something solid without sort of making too much, you know, without distracting too much from all of your other commitments. And the other thing that I've learned, maybe you, because we all procrastinate and at some point, and the good thing about 10 minutes is you can sort of do a bit of a, I constantly do a deal with myself, which is look, you know, I'd really love to just something mundane, maybe like I'd really love to weed that veggie garden, but, you know, I haven't got 3 hours and I haven't got the inclination, but I will do it for 10 minutes. And almost inevitably 10 minutes turns into 20 minutes, and then 20 minutes could turn into an hour. And for some people, if it's a new interest or hobby or behavior or goal or particular, you know, mindset, as I said, once you've got started, then you can make the choice and go, you know, I'm quite enjoying this, or I'm going to do it for 20 minutes, or it might just be 10 minutes. And that's great too.
Totally. I used to bargain with myself in between babies 2 and 3. I did a lot of running, and that was like my peak where I did like, you know, 5, 10 kilometer races and things.
Yes.
But I wouldn't feel like it. I'd be like, no, you just go for 10 minutes. It's all you have to do. And of course, like you said, it was enough that it like shook off kind of the cobwebs and was like, you're fine. Like, actually, you got your sneakers on and you're fine. You can do your proper 5K run.
You're ahead of your time, because you're ahead of this whole concept before it was even launched. But I think anybody, any of our listeners or your listeners who has a running history would know, maybe it's even 5 minutes, but don't you find like the worst, and it's the same with swimming, the worst part of the swim or the run is at the beginning more than the end often. It's the getting started part. Like when I used to run a bit, like the first 5 minutes, you know, your breathing would be irregular, everything would be aching and your hips.
Yeah.
And then you sort of get in the zone.
Yeah.
And it depends on your circumstance. Same with swimming, like the first 500 meters is really discordant for me. And then once you sort of get into the flow, so a lot of this concept of change your life in 10 minutes is finding your flow, but it's easier said than done. So if you can sort of go through just the start process, and then if you can get to them, then it can be a life-changing habit, or it might be just something you do as a one-off and think, you know, well, I did do my 10 minutes, but I choose not to do that again. You know? I'm going to study sort of Aristotle, or you're just going to come up, you know, you'll work your way through the menu, you know. So this book has kind of got hundreds of bite-sized, you know, morsels that you can sample, or you might want to chew your way through the whole menu, or you might just sort of chomp on something and think, oh my God, you know, I love fillet steak. I'm only going to eat fillet steak from now on, and this is going to be my thing and my shtick. And it kind of can be the start of, you know, a whole new passion.
So good. Yes. And I think I only remember two times that I only did 10 minutes where I was like, no, I'm grumpy. I feel like crap. I'm going home. Like I have done that every time.
Isn't it? So, you know, for all of us, and there is that cliche, I think the hardest part of writing is, you know, sitting down on your bed and putting the shoes on. You know,
Probably.
it's the
I haven't
intention.
heard that,
That's the
but
hardest.
probably.
That's the hardest part of writing, you know.
What I loved about the book, Roseanne, is that is the was the sections, because it's not a book that you have to read from start to finish. You can really pick it up and go, oh, okay, like connection. I'm really feeling like, there's a sticking point there. And so that way you can treat it like a buffet.
Yeah, see, I like the food analogies. As I said, we've got morsels, we've got meals, and we've got fillet steak. No, I sort of deliberately, because I am really passionate about trying to use those, challenging all those challenges as inspiration for others and to make them purposeful. I've deliberately written the book to appeal to as many people as possible. So I've pitched it in a really accessible way, and it's on a couple of levels. So for anyone who hasn't read it, my personal story weaves through the beginning, and it's those light and short, well, not light really, but short and accessible, but they're kind of life-changing moments that happened to me. And then it goes into the theme. So, you know, it might be water or resilience or kindness, or as you say, connection, health, weight, aging, workplace, all of this sort of some of the various themes in the book. And then it talks a little bit about, in a light way, about why that might be relevant, and some of, I hate to use the word, but theory, but some relevant information about that. And then it goes into a whole swag of tips or hacks to use that theme. So really, I've deliberately written it whether you can pick it up and read it from front to back or back to front, or just pick up, or even tip pick one tip. And if that's what connects with you, and that's enough, and that can maybe move that block that might have been inhibiting, you know, particular growth or change mindset, you know, then I'm super happy because that was the goal. And I know that, you know, not that many people read books so much anymore. So I really wanted to produce a book that was, as I said, non-threatening, a shame-free zone, something for everybody. So this, you know, it's easy to read. You know, I had something really lovely happen to me last week. And I do have an English degree, and I'm a journalist of, you know, 30 years experience. And but I've deliberately tried to pitch it sort of in an accessible way. And there's this beautiful girl I know who has special needs. She has an intellectual disability, but she's very high functioning. And I'm really proud of how well she's going. And she reached out through my daughter, actually. And she said, tell your mom that I haven't got a book yet. So I made a point of getting her a copy, and I got the most, if I had it handy, I'd pull it out. I got the most beautiful text message from her last week, which just said, I loved your book, Roseanne. It was fantastic. So for me, you know, to have a really diverse audience, and you know, one of my main readers was a specialist, you know, he has two medical specialties. He's a highly regarded, you know, internationally regarded specialist. And he was somebody who also really connected with the simplicity of the book. So for me, that was kind of, I suppose, the most satisfying feedback that I could get. It doesn't really matter. Oh, it doesn't really matter, you know, how educated or how experienced necessarily you are. I think it's often the simple messages and the simplicity, and it's about the timing of the messages and the relevance that counts. So I kind of tried to pitch it that way, that it really is a matter of just picking it up, and hopefully you're getting something that changes the course of your day, and perhaps changes that mood, or you know, just basically gives you enough enthusiasm or confidence or support to just get started.
Yeah, definitely. And I think simple is always more powerful than complex because we don't want to use too many brain calories to figure it out, right? So simple
100%.
is always powerful in whatever the in ever whatever we do. I
I love
think.
it. One of my best friends has just written this fantastic book called Rightly or Wrongly, and it's an unfussy guide to the English language. And I was at her book launch last week, and she, I can't remember exactly, but it just reminded me of this philosophy that I subscribe to also. And it was a letter from somebody who said, I'm really sorry that this letter is really long. I just didn't have time to make it shorter. And that's kind of how I feel about writing in general. It's so easy to just write reams and reams and reams, or be self-important, or wag your finger, or science is so important, but drown people with stats and facts and figures, and I think for me the most powerful things and the most potent things are just the. It is that one percenter, it's the one percenters that can make you sort of stop in your tracks and think, wow, I can do that, I can start.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're right in that this book can give you that little kickstart because if you pick it up or you have it on your bookshelf, then you know that it's there. And so maybe now you need connection, maybe in 2 weeks you need something on fear.
Exactly.
And it's like having a coach that can see your blind spots, that you can just pick it up and be like, ah, actually, like that's the one that's speaking to me. Do you know what I mean? It's things that you might not think about that you can just have there to try.
One of my philosophies, I think, and I actually collect signs. I did have a newspaper background and I collect newspaper signs, and where I've started to sort of run a little bit of a social media, th a little thread through the social media that I'm getting up and running on my Insta, which is graffiti and keywords. And I'm kind of a real believer. If anybody is a bit of a student of the universe, or even if they are a little bit more sort of, and I'm so, it's right brain or left brain, because I'm so creative, I get my hemispheres morphed. But for sort of more lateral thinkers, it's maybe more inaccessible. But I'm a real believer, it's kind of like the universe will give you the message, or the writing will be on the wall, or the sign will come. It's just about, I guess, having the confidence, or the experience, or the wherewithal to just draw breath and maybe have a look around. And in a way, I hope this book can be like that for some people too, because it is a bit of a reference book. And so if you can get one thing now, I'm not offended if you put it down or you only read one chapter, but hopefully, like next year, you might pick it up and that might be just something else that was just kind of what you needed to hear at the time, right place, right time.
Completely. I know when I picked it up first, I read all the stories and read through it. But at the time, I wasn't reading through every single tip because I wasn't needing every single tip. It was scanning that and reading the rest, knowing like, oh my gosh, this is like such an amazing resource to keep coming back to. And I think that is where the power of it is because, like you were saying, change is hard, and we just need that kickstart, like that spark plug to get us moving. And this book can be that thing for so many people across so many areas.
I don't know about you, Annalise, but I've read a lot about change, obviously, and now I've written a lot about change. And there's a lot of stuff, change is good, and the world rotates, for God's sake. So if we're not changing, we're not changing, like the world will change on us. So there's so much imper you know so many so much evidence of why we kind of need to embrace change, but it's freaking hard. I don't know, no one really puts their hand up, I think, and says, I want to change, I want to change. There's something, about our level of comfort, that many of us just want to sort of be comfortable and stay where we are, and that's fine. Like, I think that's completely natural and it's in our human nature, but unfortunately, if we don't elect to change, change sort of elects us. It's like change chooses us. So I think that's where it comes in handy. Even though I'm a proponent, you know, and an advocate for change, I'm the first one, you know, to try to resist it too if it feels uncomfortable or unwelcome. And that's most of the time. But what I'm sort of trying to do with the book and the associated social media and trying to get some of those messages out there is to give people some, you know, some of those crutches or supports or inspiration, or so they can feel a level of security and safety while still taking a risk. Or it doesn't have to be a big risk, it can be a measured risk, or what, just taking that step to get the movement. So because change is really about getting momentum, you know, and so it's basically breaking it down to, as I said, small bits, digestible bits, you know, and it's through that that you get momentum and where you can really get deadly and, you know, and start to sort of really see progress. But I think the resistance to it is not something that I think people should feel ashamed of, or, you know, it's very human to resist change.
Completely. We're wired for survival, right? Like, where we're wired for comfort, and where we are, we know is safe enough, even if it's not a great place. And anything that's not in that comfort zone is scary and unfamiliar and potentially risky. Like, I think it's just, we're naturally wired for that. And so I love that you've just got nice, easy 10-minute starting points, so that that momentum can build towards the change that people really want, or if not want, then need. So, well,
it's more in hindsight, isn't it, whether you decide whether, you know, you needed it, but you probably didn't want it.
Oh, completely. And I think it takes a while to, like you were saying, like, decide to make it happen. Like, I knew for probably 2 years before I stopped eating sugar that I had to stop eating sugar. Like, that was going to be the right thing. But it took me 2 years to be like, all right, like, I'll do it, literally. And now it's been like 7 years, and it's fine, and it's just part of life. But it took me 2 years.
I've tried from experience. Often, you know, it's the tap on the shoulder, and you ignore it assiduously. And then eventually it kind of bites you on the, can I say, ass? Or it's like hits you in the front of the face like a Mack truck, you know.
Yeah.
So it's those little warning signs that we get better at identifying, I think, you know, as the years and the experience rolls on. But, you know, I also am a real believer and an advocate for working with what we've got, you know, like you don't always have to be the poster girl for change. It's just like working with the circumstances at hand and just sort of doing the best for now. And I think there's that really nice saying, you know, people mostly do their best, and when you know better, do better. But don't beat yourself up for where you're at now. You know, because most of us are just running around with our own personal struggle, trying to do the best we can. And I think that's a good thing, you know, as a parent to you, you know, it's something that I kind of try to imbue in my children. You know, I'm far from the perfect parent. And certainly if I'd had, you know, if I had another sort of, if it wasn't a dress, you know, if it was a rehearsal and I had another crack at it, you know, I definitely pull different levers. But, you know, I just think, certainly as a parent, a lot of us beat ourselves up because you look in hindsight and think, shit, you know, I really could have, should have done that differently and with a different set of circumstances and different insight and wisdom. But shit, you know, when you know better, do better. What more can you do?
Totally. Yeah, it's tricky. So what do you think it is? And maybe you know the answer, but I feel like when you're saying like the tap on the shoulder, where you kind of know that maybe you need to make a change, or you think that that might be beneficial. What is that tipping point where people actually do make change? Is it when like they get too uncomfortable in the space where they're at that it becomes easier to do it? Does that make sense? I'm not articulating it very well.
No, well, obviously, I mean, we have so many circumstances and experiences, and there's a whole sliding scale where some stuff, you know, we can be quite, I don't know about myself, I can feel quite fluid and free thinking and preemptive, and I can see, oh, you know, I can see, you know, I have a tennis playing background, I can sort of see how this game is unfolding. I can see what my tactics need to be and whatever. And I can sort of feel like a little bit like the master of my own universe. You know, I feel like I have agency and, you know, and that's a really positive way where it's kind of like all out in front. But unfortunately, we all have situations where we're blindsided. And like I said, it bites you on the ass, or it might have either been by us avoiding the warning signs, or it's just simply the sheer fact of existence. You know, shit happens, accidents happen, you know, life has a way of, you know, of beating us up, as I say, or keep saying, stop saying us, they're biting us on the backside, you know. So I think it is a kind of whole amalgam of that. There's a sliding scale of, you know, yes, you can be quite insightful and prevent, you know, preventative or proactive and skillful and, you know, clever and smart and creative and, you know, really ahead of the curve and all of those things. And that's all ideal and it's amazing. And I'm sure we're, you know, but unfortunately life has the way of both. Like on the left hand, that can be amazing. You could be in stride, and on the right hand, you're out of step because it's a juggle and a balance. So it's not just your own set of circumstances. It's the whole, you know, whole kind of amorphous mess of your family or your workplace or your mental health, you know, in your own head. It doesn't even have to be outside your head. It's just that whole balance within your own head, you know, of, some days are just harder than others. And, you know, sometimes all of these philosophies are just like irrelevant, because the hardest part sometimes might be just getting out of bed. You know, that could be a victory. You know, literally getting out of your jammies, you know, and cleaning your teeth and making your bed and things that might be fundamental. And other days, you know, you might think that you can, you know, soar. So I just think, what am I really trying to say there? I think, one, I'm getting back to that point, we must remember not to be so hard on ourselves, and remember that kindness and empathy for others too, because that other saying of, you don't really know what other people are going through and what particular kind of circumstances and what day they're having or what capacity they do have to manage challenges. But the other thing is, you know, the same set of circumstances can have a completely different impact on us on a different day or a different time. So much about life and tips and survival and straddling change and navigating change is about timing and resilience and, you know, support and self-perception, you know. Like if you're feeling confident and somebody insults you, you can kind of just go, yeah, you know, like what a dickhead. But if you're feeling really fragile, and, you know, you're dealing with some stuff and things aren't going well at work and maybe your relationship's on the skids, you know, and you're really sort of feeling perilous, you know, or walking that tight. It's not just a tightrope, it's a tightrope. And you're really sort of, you know, trying to make that difficult straddle. And somebody could say something like that. That could just be enough, you know, to bring you unstuck. So kind of they're the things that I have tried to encapsulate in the book, that at any point in time you could pick something up, and it can be the, like, a little bit of a friend or the kind word that you might not be able to get somewhere else. But I guess my enduring message is, you know, we all feel like that sometimes. So maybe my book isn't going to be the answer for you, but just even hearing this might be the, you know, just be a little reminder, and also for you to be that person. You know, because we all have our standards, and if other people kind of aren't living up to them, you know, we can be maybe perhaps judgmental or critical or quietly or loudly, you know, just less the understanding or patient, but just it is a timely reminder that we all kind of have our, I suppose we all have our strengths and our, you know,
in our moments, right?
I was about to say, in our moment, you know, we all have our moment. And
I think it's all cyclical, like you were saying about change. I think that we have our own cycles, or we should at least observe some of those, where sometimes we're racing towards something and sometimes we're resting, and that we don't need to be on all the time, because, yeah, we're going to feel
One of my lessons, and something that I think a lot about, and I've seen certainly the impact deleteriously, negatively and positively in my own core and good choices that I've made and my own emotional faceplants is just the role the patterns play in our life. And that's a little bit getting into the, well, a lot really, the philosophy of the book is kind of about creating, giving us tools to create good habits and good patterns, but also giving us time to little think about and evaluate some of the patterns. They're not necessarily bad patterns, or they may be bad patterns, but the patterns that aren't kind of serving us anymore, or they might have served us when we were younger, or we had a different self-view of the world or a different set of circumstances. But something I'm really interested in is like the power of patterns. And I suppose underpinning the concept of the book is, yeah, patterns are really, really bloody powerful. So make sure that, you know, if you can, that they're working for you, you know, that, and you, we all have experience of self-destructive patterns, even if you don't admit it, I reckon, you know, it's like, again, a scale of that. But, you know, always within that is the wisdom. Like I said, my starting point of finding this book was, you know, from some really dark places and really dark situations, half of which I'd sort of navigated myself into, you know, shitty one-way streets. And it's just like, well, good on you, you know, Roseanne, that wasn't very artful footwork. So then it's kind of like, for me, it was asking the question, how did I get here? It's like that Talking Head song. You know, I asked myself, where is my beautiful house? Where is my beautiful wife? I asked myself, how did I get here? Like, that's certainly a song that I sang in my head for about 10 years. It's how the hell did I end up here in a situation of family trauma? So I got my kids out of a very challenging situation. It was certainly emotionally dangerous. It was very dangerous. Then I lost my job. And then it was like, I'm a single mother. Then I lost my mum. My mum died. So I was single. I had no family sort of formal support to speak of. I did have a loving sort of siblings, but it's a different situation. And then I lost my job. And you just sort of think, I had two children to feed. And then I snapped my Achilles and I couldn't walk for 6 months. So I was in this situation where, you know, and another lesson I've learned is you never quite know when you've bottomed out. You think, oh, this is my run of bad luck. This is it. This is definitely it. And now I'm on the upward swing. And then there'll be another kind of face plant. And then you think, well, that's definitely it. You know, like, you know, I've survived family. I've lost my mum. That's it. It's not going to get any worse. You know, and then you lose your job. Then I lost my job and I didn't have an income and I'm a single parent. And then you think, well, that can't get any worse than that. So in my situation, when things were at their absolute worst, I went out and played a tennis tournament because that was really grounding for me and to give my children the fresh air and try to just change that energy. And then I was serving and I snapped my Achilles and I couldn't walk for 6 months. And I didn't have income protection. I didn't have plan B. And I couldn't drive and my kids had to get to school and I couldn't feed them. I couldn't even make a cup of tea because you can't hop with a cup. And then you just think, that has to be rock bottom, right?
Oh, my
gosh. I'm not sort of being a victim in any way or crying poor, because we all know you only have to turn the news on to see how much worse life can be for any of us. So I never lost my perspective and I never got in victim mode, but part of you just goes, how much worse is this going to get? You know, and how much you're sort of allocating your own resources. How much, you know, am I cutting my cloth here? Like, is this it? Or, you know, like, am I on the upward swing?
What are we dealing with here?
Exactly. So it was actually at that point that I did make that life-changing thing. If I get out of this, and I'm going to, because I have to, because we don't have a choice, because, you know, we're a family and we are going to survive, not only, we're going to thrive, we're going to soar, we're going to succeed, you know, we're going to really, you know, really heal. You know, I just knew there was healing there for me somewhere out of that. But I thought, this shit show has to be happening for a reason. And when I get out of this and I'm determined, I'm going to show those kids that, you know, shit things happen to everybody. It's just how you deal with it that counts. And out of the darkness, you know, comes the light. And out of the rock bottom, you know, is the insight and the wisdom. And in hindsight, of course, that's where the growth is.
What did you do, Roseanne?
I think I drank a lot of wine to
start with. Fair enough.
I just another lesson I learned, because I don't know about you, but I'm very independent, and I find it really hard to accept help. It was one of my big lessons. I had to just become a lot more humble, to be honest, and I had to accept help. So, for example, with the kids, you know, there's lovely people at their school, but I didn't know them that well. They banded together and ran a roster and took my kids to school. Like, I even get emotional thinking about it. Because the other thing I've learned, when you need help, if you look around, there's sort of a hand there, but it's actually rarely or never the hand that you've helped. It's kind of never the people you help who end up helping you when you need it. You know, it's often they're not mentioning any names, of course, but maybe the people who I did have credits with and had been really helpful towards, if I say so myself, they kind of weren't really the ones who helped me. It was the people I felt I had no credits with, and I felt very humbled by it, were the ones who stepped in and said, right, here's a casserole for dinner, and we're running a roster, and we're picking the kids up and to and from. And so a couple of really key people whom I felt kind of appeared from the shadows, really. And I felt bad about that, because no one likes to take something for nothing. But that was a huge lesson for me, was to have the humility, I think, and the grace and the lack of ego to just learn to say thank you.
Yeah, it's hard. It
can
be hard.
So that's how I kind of survived, really, at that point, was and just the generosity of spirit of friends who just sort of rallied and made me laugh, you know. And so I was lucky to have, you know, good people, really. And it wasn't the people who were around me maybe previously, it was the people who presented themselves in that moment. So, yep, I'm first to admit I was really lucky, and that maybe not everybody is that lucky. But there's certainly lessons that I think I would like to share with others, like that other saying is things are darkest before the dawn, you know, so never give up. There's always a way.
I think that too, because I've been on both sides of that, both the giver and the receiver. Like 2021 was really hard for us. Like my husband was building our house. I had a newborn. I was the only one with the income. We were in and out of lockdown. Like it was a really challenging year.
I'm
and it was
sure
similar
it was.
Where it's like, oh, okay, I can't do it by myself. And again, with lockdowns and things, it was hard with how much I could receive.
So how did you get through?
I think knowing that it was light at the end of the tunnel, and going like,
it
it's
takes
just
a lot of
this
faith,
period.
Doesn't it?
Totally.
It takes a lot of faith.
And
so
for us, it was the house was getting built. So there was a deadline when Jason wasn't going to be working 15, 18 hours a day, where I would have his support back in it. And it was just like moment by moment. So all of the rules for parenting went out the window. I didn't co-sleep beforehand, but I had a newborn. You better believe it. We were co-sleeping. He was like, he wanted the boob. He got the boob. It was just whatever made life easier, and just dropping the standards on how clean the house was and like all of the things.
Well, I think that's one of the lessons that I really admire, and I admire about you, is I think we do get trapped in perfectionism and our standards, and I'm all for standards, I'm all for rules, but sometimes there comes a time where they cease to serve us, and it's really takes more strength and courage to kind of, and the subtitle of my book is How Aiming Low Can Give You a High. And that kind of means just like sort of stop aiming for perfection. Like, you're trying too hard. Like, you know, like, why, you know, when a kind of average job will do, we don't have to always do an amazing job. But the other thing is, I think often it is that self-critic in us that doesn't allow us to do things a certain way. And to just understand that, you know, we're kind of like, when the goal is survival, the best you can is the best you've got.
Yeah.
Doing the best you can is winning.
Totally. And even like you said, it comes back down to like the 1%, and have that be the goal. Like, what's the minimum?
Exactly. What's the minimum you can do?
Yeah.
Stop trying to be perfect. You know, do a half-assed job. But my message is always just, my mum had a beautiful saying that has influenced this book, which, and I think she just understood this more than, you know, way before her time, which is, I don't care what you do, just do something. And that's kind of the philosophy of the book, is because it is from the act of moving and motion that then we kind of get on our way and do stuff. And it's the other thing, I don't know, she used to say, I don't know if your mum used to say it, is if you want something done, ask a busy person. But I think that kind of is an understanding of the law of motion. It's actually not the law of motion.
True. Yeah, it's true.
It's
You're
law
right.
Of motion, which is not that I'm advocating to be overly busy, because I'm giving you a license to stop being busy if you want to, you don't have to be so busy. But I'm just saying, I think that they were ahead of their time there by understanding that law of motion is what sort of is where the growth happens and where the change happens. And so we all get stuck, but in stuckness, it's very hard to get growth, because you're not, you know, well, in fact, it's impossible, because if it's stuck, there's no movement and it's just kind of backwards.
Well, that's why when you're stuck, the aiming low, it's like, okay,
and
great.
That's why I sort of feel like I'm giving everybody a license to just be half-assed.
That's not the mission, like overall mission that I got from
have
the
my
book.
License.
But if you're
have
stuck
my permission,
there,
just try a little less hard.
Unless you're feeling like you can soar, then go for it, baby,
exactly.
right?
Unless it's feeding you, you know, unless it's giving you that energy, you know, to soar, you know, but otherwise, just sort of give yourself a pat on the back. You moved. Well done, you. Move on to the next thing. You know, you're not liking it. Find something else to do.
Yeah, so good. My goodness. Thank you so much for that, for this conversation. It's, I think really encouraging, and because we all get to that point, right, where we're like, I don't know how to change this thing. And so just getting that tiny bit of momentum can be that first domino that knocks down all the other dominoes.
It's just taking that step. And one thing I think I've thought about, you know, I love running, like I said, and I love doing too much and climbing mountains and swimming things. And, you know, I'm always sort of looking at the horizon or the mountain or the peak or the prize. I'm constantly trying to teach myself, stop overthinking it and just maybe worry about the next step, you know, rather than sort of writing the whole, you know, painting the whole picture or writing the whole sonnet or, you know, fleshing it all out into a life, or where's this leading me? You know, where's this going? Where's my career going? Where's my relationship going? And maybe just kind of ease up and just worry about one step. That's just the next one.
Yeah.
And then after that, worry about the next one. It's quite freeing.
Yeah, totally. I had an analogy once that imagine you're in the dark and you're going up the stairs, and all you have is a lantern in your hand, right? Like God gave you the lantern and you can see the next step. So you just have to just like take one step. And then as you take that next step, the next step is lit up by the lantern. And so it's kind of just like that, whether it's stairs or path or whatever. But I love that analogy.
Don't get me wrong, Annalise. I'm all for vision and big picture and seeing the change and being it. I'm all for that. That really is powerful and it is real. But I think, depending on our makeup, sometimes we just get too hooked on the destination of how it's going to be and how it's going to look for you. And if we can somehow liberate ourselves from all that dogma and expectation and perfection and Instagram, it's going to look like and, you know, if we can somehow just free ourselves of that and just keep it simple, just particularly when it's hard. I think when it's hard and you can't do the step, just do the inch. Just keep moving.
I think both can work together, right? If you're going, okay, I know I want like this sort of life, or I know I want my health to be like this, but I don't know where to start.
Vision,
okay,
isn't
it's just the first thing. Because you can have both. I think you can, like, both can work together. We need to let go of seeing the entire pathway all of the way there.
And I think, I'm not very good at this, by the way, but I think letting go of the prescription.
Oh, totally.
You know, like, it's like the chemist's prescription. This, you know, has a certain map, these are the ingredients in it and these are the outcome and it's all prescribed. You know, I think just letting go of that and just going, maybe what is it like taking some random drug and going, where this is going to take me, you know, like just sort of, you know, like just not being so prescribed with it, you know.
Yeah.
Taking that step and putting it with your particular circumstances and maybe having a little bit more sense of wonder about, oh, shit, you know. Where's this trip that I'm going on?
I don't know. I don't know if we should advocate for that.
I'm not advocating for mind
Oh,
altering
I'm
drugs.
joking. I'm joking.
I just got caught up on the whole prescription
Analogy. You
theory.
did. It's okay. I know. I know. But yeah, I think you're right because I think if anything, the whole pandemic taught us that so much of what we thought we had control over is just a mirage anyway, right?
Yeah,
So we don't
exactly.
actually have control over anything. We can have our goals and dreams and hold them, but hold them loosely, right? Or going like, yeah, that's what I want, but how I get there, I'm less attached to. And then that way it's just step by step because we don't get to choose anyway, right? We just, it's all just happening.
I do think we got a say in it, you know.
Yeah, it would be nice, but also bloody boring. Imagine if you knew every day and every, like, I don't know.
I don't know. As I'm back to the scripts again, but if you can write, there's the prescription and then there's the script, and they're sort of similar. But if you could write your own script, yes, it would be great. But, you know, life's not like that.
Oh, a point. We get to, and then things get thrown at us to teach us lessons and all of
And
the
then you write a
things.
book about it, Annalise.
And another book.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Well, then we'll get on to the next book.
Well, thank you, Roseanne, so much for spending the time and taking the time to speak with me today. I've had a lot of fun, and I know that wherever people are at, there's always growth in personal and professional, and things are constantly changing. And to feel like we can have a little bit of semblance of control about how the change that we choose, and when we are feeling stuck, to know that there is that low hanging fruit that we can pick to begin to get ourselves moving is really powerful. So thank you so much for writing this book and putting it out into the world. I know it's already had impact on so many people and is going to continue to do that. And so thank you for, you know, saying yes to this vision and putting it out there, because
thank
it's
you,
it's a really valuable gift.
Thank you, Annalise. And if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Thank you, Roseanne. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Two things before you go. If you have loved this episode, please grab your phone to subscribe and review the show. And if you are ready to make a power move in your business, book a free strategy call with me, and you will walk away with a 3-step action plan and a new fire in your belly. Book your call at annalisewarn.com/consult. The link is in the show notes. Have a fabulous week.